All right, welcome to the WWE podcast for Monday Night Raw review and the draft night two or part two review. We're going to go through all of the big picks and moves to Monday Night Raw, as well as the things that actually happened on Monday Night Raw, like a dual brand battle royal for the women's championship. The Raw Women's Championship makes absolutely zero sense, but it's not all bad. There's a lot of good to talk about, so let's get it all started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no-bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do, too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast, and boy, there's a ton to cover. My God, when there's a draft, there's so many things that you can dive into. It's really endless. So we'll cover the majority of things, at least on a high level, and we're going to go through Monday Night Raw, of which it was a very interesting, infuriating, yet newsworthy version of Raw that I've seen in a while. So we're going to get into that. Again, all the big moves. Headlined by The Fiend moving to Monday Night Raw. I think that's actually a really good thing for The Fiend, i.e. Bray Wyatt. And, you know, I thought about that. I said, are they going to draft each version of Bray Wyatt? You know, like, are they going to have, like, a throwback to Mick Foley getting three entries into the Royal Rumble? I believe it was 1998 when he came in as Cactus Jack. He was Dude Love and Mankind. And he kept getting eliminated each time. I believe it was 1998. But they didn't. They just drafted The Fiend. And you would assume that all versions of Bray Wyatt go with that. It's kind of a package deal. And so much to cover. There's so much to cover with that. And we're going to get to it. But first, thank you guys for joining me here on this Raw review. And on this iPhone announcement day, iPhone 12 was announced earlier today. If you care about those kinds of things, as I mentioned. Or maybe you don't. Maybe you have an Android and you despise Apple. Whatever the case may be, it's a newsworthy day in the world of tech as well for the iPhone, iPhone 12 and all the versions of that that come out over the next month or so. So we're going to get to Monday Night Raw in a minute. But first, if you guys want to reach out to the show, email us at realwwepodcast@gmail.com or send us a voicemail. Voicemail is always the best way to get in touch with us because it gets your voice on the show. I don't have to worry about paraphrasing you. You know that your message is being delivered. And that number is 518-952-0247. And we've got a few of those voicemails to get to at the top of the show here. And we will do so. But let me just first talk about the draft on a high level, conceptually. Now, I will give WWE credit. Here are the positives. Don't worry, there are some negatives for those that love my ranting or my bashing of WWE logic. The good is that we didn't get any wacky presentation. We didn't get any bizarre war room by Fox executives and by USA executives who are going bonkers for every pick that they make. I mean, I remember them going bonkers over like their fifth round draft pick. It was embarrassing. I mean, last year was just I know what they're trying to do, and I know that I'm a big fan of them trying to simulate actual sports. But it didn't work last year, okay? I appreciate the effort, but it was an embarrassment of having just people in a conference room cheering, of which they have no idea of why they got who they got and why they did and why they even care that they're cheering. It was just terrible. But this year was different, and I advocated for this. I just said, have someone come out to a podium and just announce the picks. Let's make it simple. And that's exactly what happened here with Stephanie McMahon. I still am not a fan of her music. Her music is like a Pavlovian response to just a sigh of desperation or just a sigh of depression. It's probably a better word. I hear the Stephanie McMahon music. I'm like, ugh. It just got drilled into me during the Authority era. It seemed like every single Monday Night Raw, Stephanie McMahon and Triple H would come out to Raw, open Raw, welcome us to Monday Night Raw, because we always have to say welcome to Monday Night Raw as if we don't know what channel we're watching or what we're watching. And it just seemed like it went on forever, and it did. So when I hear that music, I still get that feeling. And she has a very annoying voice. I mean, it's just her natural speaking voice. It is what it is. But she has just an annoying, I don't want to listen to you for more than 7 seconds voice. So you pair that with her music, and guess what my brain connects to? Depression and annoyance of the authority era. So that is what I got. But look, it's good to see Stephanie McMahon back for a short, very short time, hopefully. And then she can go back to making sure that she doesn't, or she distances herself from what WWE actually is. And that's a wrestling company. Okay, that's exactly what they are. And they could say, oh, we're entertainment. No, you perform wrestling, professional wrestling, as a method of entertainment. Don't tell me you're just an entertainment company. That's not a thing. Entertainment in and of itself is not activity. You have to have a vehicle to entertain people. Okay? And they will far and away say that they are not a wrestling company. So she can go back to doing her Forbes top CFO award winners, win a Nobel Prize, whatever she wants to do to distance herself from exactly what WWE is. That's World Wrestling Entertainment. So she can go back and hide in her little office and go on her social media and talk about women empowerment and talk about, whatever she wants to talk about and politics, whatever. Because that's exactly what she's done. She is no longer the Stephanie McMahon of yesteryear. So that's fine. But I enjoyed the format of just having her come out and having her announce the draft picks and not have her not have a pomp and circumstance. It was very to the point. There was no explanation as to who or why or how these were picked. And it's fine. I'm fine with it. So we are also getting closer to Hell in a Cell. Hell in a Cell is just under 2 weeks away now. And that means we have a big review show coming for you with the Botch Guy. We'll be teaming up again to check out or to review the pay-per-view. So we'll be collaborating once again for the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. Again, just 12 days away, whatever it may be. So that'll be a ton of fun. And check out his YouTube channel. Again, I can't speak highly enough of him. He's just hilarious to watch because it's authentic. And that's what's great. It's not like he's putting on an act. He's being himself about wrestling and how much he loves it or how much he hates what's going on or whatever it may be. He just loves the damn product and wants to see it improve just like we do here. So check him out on YouTube at The Botch Guy. But also, we will be doing a collaborative show. And if you haven't listened to our show previously, I did a review show with him for the draft night one for SmackDown that occurred. So guys, check that out. But all right, let's get to voicemails. And I've got some other things to talk about, including, as I said at the top of the show, with the just preposterous dual brand battle royal for the women that, yes, Lana ended up winning. And I'll get to that. That's not even the issue for me. Okay. Like, some people are going up in arms about Lana. Yeah, it makes no sense that Lana, out of all people, considering we all were just wanting her to go away. And after Rusev went to AEW, we thought she would hopefully just disappear off of our screens. No, she's back. And believe it or not, I'm not really ranting about that. I'm not going to be speaking too negatively about Lana winning. What I am going to be a bit frisky on is the whole dual brand battle royal for the Raw Women's Championship. How does that work? How the hell does that work? Right? Think about this. If this is a dual brand battle royal for the Raw Women's Championship, what if somebody from SmackDown wins? And then they go on to challenge Asuka, and Asuka loses the championship to said person, and then that person stays on SmackDown. They hold the Raw Women's Championship hostage on SmackDown? Does anybody think through anything? Or did they just not have enough women on the roster to make a battle royal out of just the Raw women on that half? I mean, come on! This is where they just are absurd. And another thing, if WWE or if we're supposed to believe that this is a true draft, and I'm going with that narrative. I know we all know that it's actually creative behind the scenes, making the picks and Vince approving each pick and who's going to what show. There's no true picks by networks. Networks don't give a damn. They just want ratings to be good. If one brand drafted, say for instance, I'm Raw. I draft the SmackDown Tag Team Champions to Raw. What if SmackDown doesn't do the same? They're just left with no tag team champions, and Raw is left with two sets of tag team champions? Think about that, because yes, we got Adam Pearce to have the Street Profits and New Day swap championships to their respective brands. Makes total sense. But what if that didn't happen? Was there a failsafe for that? I know I'm going on the what-ifs, but it's just preposterous that they even allow champions to be drafted. Makes no sense, because it's you don't want to have a brand capture all the championships. Then what? Especially if they're brand specific, like Raw, SmackDown Tag Team Champion, or I'm sorry, yeah, the SmackDown Tag Team Championships, the Raw Tag Championships, the women also have their own specific championships. To me, here's what I would do. I would keep the brand split and have one team that are the tag team champions that float between Raw and SmackDown, and one women's champion. Think about this. In WWE, you have three women's champions. Three. Which makes the championship that each are holding a third less valuable, because there are two others out there. And yes, NXT is its own deal, I get it. But if NXT is truly a third brand, like we all have, I think, generally accepted as a third brand, a legitimate third brand, not just the redheaded stepchild of the group, that they have come up and they have grown up and they have stood their ground, built a foundation, and we respect NXT more than I think any of us thought we would, then you should have one women's champion that floats between all three, not just Raw and SmackDown, but all three. But NXT was not included in the draft. Interesting. But you know what? I think that WWE just doesn't look past those details. They just go, oh, it's a dual brand. That's the great marketing slogan. It's interesting. Wait, we're going to have people from Raw and SmackDown? But wait, I thought Survivor Series is the only time they go head-to-head. What about this past Monday night? Right? I swear, if they use that slogan, I don't know if they have the balls to do it. With a straight face, anyway. How can they possibly do this with a straight face if they come up with Survivor Series? I can't wait. After Hell in a Cell, Survivor Series used to be my favorite show of the year. One of my favorite shows of the year. It's one of the big four pay-per-views. But ever since they started this just false rivalry between Raw and SmackDown, and now NXT as of last year, I have really kind of faded on the whole Survivor Series format because of the forced rivalry that they think is a great way to market the brand. It's a great gimmick to sell to fans. It's terrible, but we'll get to that. I can't wait to tear this pay-per-view apart if indeed they try to sell it like that. And then they tell you it's the only pay-per-view in which the competitors go head-to-head. Oh boy, I can't wait. I'm going to dismantle WWE if they end up trying to pull that over our wool over our eyes again as fans. It is so insulting to fans. And it just shows that either A, they don't care about the logic of their stories and think fans don't care, or they think that they can just pull the wool over our eyes and that wrestling fans are just generally stupid. Both are bad. Both are bad ways to view wrestling fans. If you're a fan of WWE, you should be insulted by the company if they try to pull this crap. But or in general, just there's storyline logic in general sometimes is just non-existent. But I do promise, like, guys, I have a lot of good to say about this the past Monday night. Like, I'm not just going to sit here and bash WWE or cuss and sweat. No. I've got some good to talk about. But first, let's get to those voicemails. And then we'll dive really deep into Monday Night Raw and the draft. So let's start with that first voicemail and get things rolling.
Hey, it's the Waz. Hey, just watched SmackDown from Friday with the draft and all. I'm glad they didn't pull a whole war room thing in there with the executives from both networks and all that. So that was definitely a bonus. I'm glad Stephanie just came out and said what she said. All that fun stuff. I really, really was psyched to see Seth, and I still am psyched to see Seth going to SmackDown. I really hope that he joins with Roman Reigns to, you know, create some kind of faction. And, but I was then like, felt like I got punched in the gut to see the Mysterios also going. And I'm like, come on. Why is that happening? And why are they being drafted together? Why is Rey and Dominic being drafted as one thing? Terrible. I hate it. New Day being broke up. Awesome. I really was hoping that it would be a breakup because you had Big E turning on the New Day, but the fact they did it the way they did it, I'm happy with it. They're probably just going to switch them with the Street Profits, although, like I said in the past, it'd be nice to just see them do away with two tag team champions and just go with one. So maybe having them fight the Street Profits for the Ultimate Tag Team Champion and have them float back and forth, I think that would be better. Then I guess they're breaking up Otis and Tucker because Tucker did not go with Otis. Don't make any sense. I don't understand that. They were a great tag team. Whatever. Glad to see Drew stay on Raw and Roman Reigns stay on SmackDown. I thought that was perfect. The whole Lars Sullivan thing coming. I always liked Lars Sullivan, so I'm happy he's back. I love this, the manic craziness of the guy. And, my only issue is he's back. And so now you're going to put him in the draft on Monday? Like they didn't know he was back. That kind of sounds stupid. So I love, that they're going to end this thing hopefully with, Sasha and Bayley in the Hell in a Cell. I think that would be perfect spot for them to end this whole thing. Although they may continue it on and move it forward. Who knows? So that's all I got for today, guys. And take care.
Hey, Waz. Thanks, as always, for calling in. One of our consistent call-ins. And much appreciated. So, first of all, you covered a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff of which I'm not going to repeat myself on some of the things. Because you pretty much nailed it. But I will comment on the Rollins and Mysterio, I think we're all just kind of collectively groaning. I think WWE in Stamford, Connecticut, even Vince hiding under his desk with his hands in his ears saying la 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 la, can probably hear a collective groan of wrestling fans going, oh my God, right? That's what we're all saying. And it's just, it's dead. It's over. Hopefully they can hear this one loud and clear. And Seth needs to move on. That was the point of him moving to SmackDown, is we were all going, yay, this rivalry is done. It's dead. It's over. And Seth can move on to bigger, better things. Maybe align himself with Reigns. Maybe not off the bat, but definitely down the line. I'm with you. And then we get Ray and Dominic talking about Seth Rollins' past, not being able to run from it. Oh boy. Maybe hopefully they drop it. I mean, it's just, please spare me the pain. New Day breakup was awesome. Yeah, I agree. It was a great message to send to fans that Big E's push is not over. And that Big E's push is just beginning as a singles competitor. Because I don't think he ever really got started. He showed signs of becoming a little more serious. I've been saying for weeks and weeks and weeks that this man needs to have a character evolution. He cannot stay stagnant as the just kind of the former member of the New Day hanging on to his New Day gimmick. I understand that's what people know. I understand that, and he's not going to, I don't want to expect him to come out and be, you know, goth type of, character and have a dark entrance and he's just this completely new dude. No. I get it. So if there's still a flavor of the New Day that is persistent in Big E, but shows on a weekly basis a evolution of that dissipating from him, that's fine. The stink of the New Day is going to be on him for quite some time, but as long, again, the key with Big E, be very watchful of this, guys. If they continue to keep the New Day gimmick on him and there's just no progression of that type of Big E, the spontaneous, the wacky, the inside joke, the gyrating, the eye movements, all of the very cartoonish things that he does as New Day, which I am not a fan of at all, but that got, I mean, just because I'm not a fan of it doesn't mean he wasn't a success and made tons of money. That's beside the point. It's just not my personal taste in what I like in wrestling. But if you do not see a progression of the Big E character to something different, whatever that may be, I would be very concerned about Big E. Because I didn't see a whole lot of that in his first go-around before the New Day returned. So, and I like how they didn't fight to break up. I think they can claim that they're maybe one of the only groups that's successful that did not have a massive blow-up, breakup of their own volition. It wasn't their own fault. So, yeah. Lars Sullivan back. Yeah, he destroyed Jeff Hardy, of which Jeff Hardy's facing him on SmackDown this coming Friday. He destroyed Matt Riddle. And now he is drafted to Raw. So he's on Raw. He attacked Morrison. The Miz escaped. And I don't know, I don't know what to think about Lars Sullivan, because he got himself in trouble again talking to some yoga instructor, I guess, on Instagram. Go, Google it. I mean, if you Google it, it's right there. But Lars Sullivan, it was confirmed. It's just, this isn't just somebody making up a message that didn't happen, or messages, this whole string of them. Lars Sullivan was hitting on a married woman. This dude just can't keep himself out of trouble. I mean, he just can't. And, he's not fired. And I don't think he should be. But I'd be very concerned if I was WWE to ever put a championship on him at this point, especially one that's a major championship. Very wary. I don't think you'll see a championship on Lars Sullivan for over a year. I mean that. Because especially a major championship. And what I mean by major championship, like, I'm talking WWE or Universal Championship. Over a year. Maybe touching the United States Championship, because he's on Raw now. Maybe sniffing that. But if he, as long, here's the thing. If I'm WWE, I would say to him, you're not making a good case for us to make you a prominent figure, a prominent mainstay of our brand. You're constantly getting in trouble. He's had issues with anxiety. He's had injury issues. Now he's getting himself in trouble with a married woman. And yeah, it's nothing illegal. It's just immoral. But how many things immoral has Jeff Hardy done, right? And yeah, he's got DUIs and all that, but that they're using that as part of the storyline. But even Matt Riddle admitting on video that he cheated on his wife, right? So there are stars in the company currently that are still being pushed with that in mind. So I don't think Lars Sullivan will be fired. I just would be very wary of him being the face of the company, at least for a year, maybe longer, until he can prove for a long period of time that he can be relied upon and that he is not going to be a troublemaker in the locker room or for PR. So be careful of Lars Sullivan right now. If I was WWE, I would continue to just make him a monster and a freak and all that. And I agree. I like his presence a lot. So we'll have to see. The last thing you talked about, and I'm going to get to the next voicemail here, is Bayley Sasha ends at Hell in a Cell. Yeah, maybe. I don't think so. I think they know they've got a lot of legs in this championship, this rivalry, because this is what we've been building to. This is what we've been building to, is this moment. And weirdly, we got it on SmackDown for the first iteration, which made no sense. But now that these two are going to meet at Hell in a Cell, in Hell in a Cell makes total sense. And typically Hell in a Cell is a ending point for rivalries. It's a finish. It's the finish line for most rivalries. However, since WWE implemented the annual Hell in a Cell pay-per-view into its pay-per-view calendar, it is not a endpoint because it's built into the schedule. So what if you're just starting a rivalry? Are they automatically put in the cell? It makes no sense. But I mean, I've ranted on that many, many times, so I'm not going to go down that road. So I don't know if it's the endpoint, because it's just, this is a Hell in a Cell match that's built into the schedule. I mean, we've had Hell in a Cell matches outside of the actual pay-per-view. The last one I can think of is, I know that Undertaker and Shane at WrestleMania 32, Dean Ambrose was involved in one, I think, with Seth Rollins as well. So it's happened outside of the pay-per-view, but it's not very common. So, all right. And I think it actually means more when it's not on the pay-per-view, personally. So I don't think it ends at Hell in a Cell. I think that they know they've got a lot more to go on this, possibly through the end of the year. Some people have predicted this all the way out to WrestleMania. I doubt it. I doubt it. With fans, fans sitting there and getting anxious over programs that are not over yet, I doubt it that it could last another 5 months or so. All right, let's get to that next voicemail.
Oh, hi, Matt. It's Devin from Brisbane, Australia. Thanks again for a great show last week. My comments on the first draft round, I suppose. It was exciting to see Seth Rollins come across. But then they went and brought across Ray and Dominic, that's how much interest I have in that storyline anyway. Which then I was like, oh no, they're just bringing the whole saga across to Friday night. I hope that in this draft it doesn't mean Ray's wife and daughter come across, but who knows. And then I suppose we can only hope that Murphy stays on Raw, because that will hopefully break the story up and put an end to it. My other thoughts were that with the New Day being split up, which is awesome, because I want to see Big E have his own run. However, they've advertised that this coming Friday night, which is the premiere of SmackDown on the new roster, they've still got the New Day tag team champions having a farewell match. So they're already putting two wrestlers that are supposed to be in Raw on SmackDown on the very first show. Makes no sense. Very frustrating. And I think the other comment I was to say is that I see Roman Reigns defending his championship against Braun Strowman, which we all know he's not going to lose because there's a Hell in a Cell match and a much better story with Jey Uso. So, again, I'm at a bit of a loss. But other than that, I guess we'll just have to see what happens. Stranger things have happened. But, those are my comments, and I hope you will. And thanks again for a great show. See ya. Bye.
Thanks so much, Devin. I think I heard Devin. The first words of your voicemail were a little muffled, so I hope it's Devin. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but I know you're from Australia. I got that part of it in the book. So thanks so much for calling in. And again, if I got your name wrong, I apologize. You seem to be iterating a lot of fans' frustration. I mean, I'm not going to rehash the whole Rey Mysterio, Dominic and Seth Rollins all being on the same brand. I will just say that we are all excited for Seth Rollins being on SmackDown, all because he needs an injection of adrenaline in his career. It feels like he has been just kind of spinning his wheels with the Messiah thing for a while. And to be honest, I think it peaked with AOP. When AOP joined him, it was awesome. It was great. AOP were perfect fits for him. Perfect. They were his heavies. I love their presence, their beatdowns. I'm really, really disappointed that WWE let them go. I really am. I mean, they had a really bright future in my eyes, especially as a dominant tag team and joining with Seth Rollins, and then they just, they're gone. And this is the best thing for Seth Rollins right now, is to just head on off into the sunset on SmackDown, leave Raw in his dust, in his rearview mirror, and hopefully Dominic and Rey Mysterio and Seth just stay the hell away from one another. I mean, did they just, please. I mean, you said it. If that's true that the New Day are going to have a farewell match on SmackDown, I mean, I'm guessing you sent this prior to running at Raw, because on Raw they had a swap of championships with the New Day, between the New Day and the Street Profits, swapping titles so that they can each have their brand's respective tag team championships. Makes total sense. So if that's true that they still have a farewell match, I will be shocked. And you know what? No. I won't be shocked. I will just be kind of just, I don't know what the word is, just kind of like, oh, here we go again, right? Like, it's just WWE doing what they want with no rules and no explanation. And I agree about why, you know what? Look, if you were on night one and you were drafted to SmackDown, what the hell are you doing on Monday Night Raw? Unless you want to tell me, well, the draft isn't complete. Everyone's still up in the air until the draft is complete. That's not how things work. If you're drafted to SmackDown, why are you on Monday Night Raw? Just to have the most people on the show to pop the most rating? Well, then why even have a brand split? Seriously. And you know what? Like, WWE even tweeted out, is this a co-branded show or is this something along those lines? Between, like, I think that was the moment between the Street Profits and the New Day. And I'm like, no, this is not. You're doing a brand split and then yet you're teasing having a co-opted show? What? I just don't understand. This is not a hard thing to do. Yes, you have a lot of moving pieces. You have a lot of moving pieces. Here's how WWE could have resolved their problems. By simplifying things. By just paying attention to detail and simplifying how the draft works. You may be saying, what do you mean? Well, how could they have done it better? Here's how. Number one, don't do this in the middle of a pay-per-view cycle. Do it at the conclusion of a pay-per-view. That way you can wrap up any programs that are going on in each brand and move them on to the next brand. That's number one. Number two, keep champions of this on the same that are holding championships on their brands. At least keep the ones, a bare minimum, keep the brand-specific championships on their own brands. What I mean? Women's championship and the tag team championships. Both have their own set of champions. There. And don't, and here's the most important, adhere to your own rules. No wild card. No quarterly invitationals. No people just randomly showing up with zero explanation. No farewell speeches. No farewell matches. Just adhere to your own effing rules. And it's that simple. But WWE can't help themselves. They don't care. Because the fans come second. And I explain why. I don't know when the heck it was. Last week, I explained why WWE puts the fans second. You know who comes first? Sponsors. Those that give them money. More than fans. And you can say, oh, fans give them money. The t-shirts, the merch, the tickets, the pay-per-views, the network. You're right. They do. But it pales into comparison to what the sponsors give them. It's just look at their financial sheets. Look at their cash flow sheets. I know many of you don't. I'm not knocking you for it. I'm not saying I'm smarter than you. It's just it's publicly available. You can go look. Their sponsorships are many times more in terms of revenue than the fans give them. Gates, merch, network. It's not like 100 times more, but it's significantly higher. So guess who they're going to serve first? Sponsors. And at the sacrifice of fans' frustration at times for maybe not doing something that the fans would view as necessary or just paying attention to logic. And you know what? But the logic to me here is faulted by WWE. And you may actually have management who says, guys, I know the fans are important and they are the lifeblood, but the sponsors are the ones giving us the money. Well, guess what the sponsors value their dollar on? Ratings. And guess who pushed the ratings? Guess who create those ratings? Fans' viewership. So in reality, they should put the fans first because it will essentially, through sponsorships, increase the revenue by sponsors giving them more money to be on the show for ratings that are higher. So it's just, you know, I don't know, and I'm sure that there are smart people working in WWE that think about these things. But you can tell that they are trying to serve their master at times of just caring about the sponsors and making money rather than their fans that ultimately do make them the money, even if they're not directly putting their money into the WWE's pockets. In Vince's pockets, they are indirectly contributing to the revenue that they get. So I don't know how the hell I got on this tangent, but my point is this draft can be so easy. It can be so easy by just basic details and logic. That's it. And they throw both out the window. That's what they do. So, all right, let's get to the next voicemail.
Oh, hello, buddy. It's Stuart here calling from London, England. Just first of all, it's the first time I've called in. I've been listening to your podcast only for about 4 weeks, but I've been a wrestling fan since WrestleMania 7. So stumbled upon your podcast a few weeks ago. Absolutely love it. I feel like you're the American version of me. The inaccuracies that you highlight in the WWE are exactly the same inaccuracies that I highlight. I've got a few things that I wanted to talk to you or just bring up with you today. First of all, I wanted to talk about Natalia. I mean, you know, what's going on with her? I think she's only in the WWE now because she's a Hart member. She waddles around the ring, you know, like a 60-year-old woman. Her moves remind me of my 9-year-old doing a TikTok dance. Don't really quite understand why she's still there. But it kind of brings me on to the next point, really, about Lana. and winning the Battle Royal. I don't know how that has happened either. And it kind of really annoys me that the WWE cuts to so many ad breaks throughout the event and throughout the Battle Royal. First of all, we see Asuka out on commentary, and then later on in the match, she's back in the locker room watching on the screen. I mean, why would she disappear like that? Lana under the ring or under the table, whatever, you know, as an audience member, we don't know that she's not been eliminated because there's been so many ad breaks. They've got to stop that. They've got to be a little bit more kind of highlighting of the participants that's been involved in the match. So that's my first rant. The second one, and I know you've talked about this before, Randy Orton. I mean, the guy had so much heat this year, earlier on in the year. He's one of the reasons that I've just been so addicted to WWE, and he lost at 3 pay-per-views on the spin. If he doesn't beat Drew McIntyre at Hell in a Cell, then, you know, the guy's career has got to be finished. And the final point I want to talk about is, it's just advertised, Braun Strowman versus Roman Reigns for the Universal title this Friday on SmackDown. And Braun Strowman has just been drafted to Raw. Now, why is he going back to SmackDown? I know it's a farewell, but what is the match going to be for the Universal Championship? Are we supposed to believe that he's got a chance of winning that title and then he's going to show up on his new show, Raw, the following week? Come on, these things have got to be dealt with by the big wigs and the creative team and Bruce Pritchard, you know, who's writing this stuff, because it's just holes and inaccuracies. Absolutely love the show. Sorry, I might have muted it just then. Keep up the good work. Thanks.
Hey, Stuart, thanks so much for calling in. I love your energy. It's great. Maybe you are I'm the American version of you, or you are you're the UK version of me. I don't know. Great to have you call in. Very glad you enjoy the show and glad that you can get that off your chest. That's why I love voicemail, because it allows people to vent. It allows people to just tell me what you think without typing. Sometimes typing doesn't satisfy your feelings. It's not as good as vocalizing it and ranting. So a couple of things. I was writing notes as I was listening to your voicemail. And yes, so you clearly saw Monday Night Raw. Natalya, what the hell's going on? Well, she's being paired with Lana. Natalya was also in a throwaway match with who the heck was it? Mickie James a number of weeks ago when Seth was after Dominic, or Seth was after Rey Mysterio and he poked his eye out. It was about a month and a half ago or so. Yeah, Natalya has been a grizzled veteran. She's been looked at as kind of a locker room leader. And from all what I understand, she is one of the nicest people in the locker room. And I believe that. Like, I genuinely believe that Natalya is a nice person. You know, she is more concerned, as you said, about TikTok. She does seem like she is kind of being passed by the youth, no doubt. That I think that just comes with being a victim of Father Time, as we all are. So Natalya is definitely behind the times, so to speak. And her being paired with Lana, who suddenly wins the Battle Royal, which people are up in arms about, and doesn't sound like you're too happy about it either. And you know what? I'm not really happy either, for the first and foremost, because I am not a Lana fan by any means. Like, yeah, she's a very, very attractive woman. I don't care. That doesn't do anything for me. Like, that's not what I watch wrestling for. Not at all. Even during the Attitude Era, when the women were ultra-sexualized, it didn't do as much as you may have thought. Even being a 16-year-old boy at the time, still, that's not what I watched wrestling for. I watched it for Kick-Ass, Stone Cold, Rock, Rock Taker, Triple H, all that. So I don't know what they're doing with Lana, who is now won the Battle Royal, and she is going to face Asuka for the Raw Women's Championship. I mean, LOL. I mean, does anyone truly believe that she has an opportunity or a chance, rather, to win? Of course not. Of course not. I don't need a shock victory. That would be a terrible decision. Terrible. So I don't see Lana winning. Natalya, though, I was a big fan of her work. She just is kind of that lost piece in the puzzle that occasionally shows up to the main event, cuts a halfway decent promo, gets you to believe it could be her time, and then they pull back and she goes back into obscurity. She's kind of becoming the Tamina number 2 of Raw. She's kind of becoming that part where she doesn't talk a whole lot. She comes up, you know, has a halfway decent match, and then goes back into obscurity. You don't see her. She goes back in hibernation for a number of months or whatever. And, you know, she's very respected, but it doesn't feel like she fits in today's roster, does it? It just doesn't. And I don't mean that. She's had a really good career. It just feels like it's time for her to move on, and that's okay. And look, I'm not the one to tell her that, clearly. Nobody is except her. And I understand that. But it, from a fan's perspective, it just seems as if she can probably do more good in a backstage role, maybe in a, I don't want to say managerial, but maybe like a mentoring role, maybe head down to NXT and help the women there. And I'm not saying she doesn't have a few good matches left in her, maybe even a very small run, but she is definitely at the tail end of her career. And she is respected by so many. And she is a, I think, an underrated performer that never really got a fair shake and was eaten up and spit up and chewed out. She was chewed up and spit out by the Women's Evolution and how much youth there was. And she is just exposed for father time. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying she's old, but in professional wrestling, she's at the tail end of her career. So anyway, yes, good point about that. And to your point also, Randy Orton losing 3 pay-per-views. Yeah, I'm not a fan. You guys all know that I've been a fan of Randy Orton not getting even a finisher hit on him since Edge left, much less taking a loss 3 times in a row. So yeah, Randy Orton desperately needs this win at Hell in a Cell. Desperate. This is do or die for Randy Orton. I'm with you. I don't think his career is over, to your point. I think it's going to be damaged if he loses again. This whole run would have been for, I don't want to say for nothing, because that's a big statement, but it would really take some of the steam off what Randy Orton's been able to do over the last however many months he's been doing this genius work. So he needs this win. Randy Orton can usually take a loss here, but Randy Orton needs this win, and he needs to become champion at Hell in a Cell. I mean, end of story. Braun Strowman versus Roman Reigns on SmackDown as a finale. Okay, so the draft is now over. So I can't even make the excuses. Well, the draft is still going on. It's part one, part two. So you're technically still in the draft. So I understand why SmackDown people are on Raw. That's not even exist. That doesn't exist. That excuse doesn't exist this coming Friday with Braun Strowman versus Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship. That doesn't even exist. So number one, how did Braun Strowman earn this opportunity? Does anybody know? I know that maybe they could pull from the fact that Braun Strowman just decided to insert himself into the Goldberg match at WrestleMania, which still has not been explained. No one has even brought it up. I was hoping they would actually kind of talk about that after Roman returned and speared The Fiend and Braun Strowman after SummerSlam. But they never even touched that. They never even, at least I could be wrong, but I don't think we ever got an explanation. They didn't bring that into the story at all. And it's also going to be heel versus heel. So how does that work? How does WWE insert their boos and cheers that they've been loving and just absolutely having a ball with being able to control crowd noise? I mean, they must be in their absolute glory being able to finally put in how they feel everyone should react to what's going on. I mean, they must love this. I can't wait to see when fans are truly back to see what fans actually think about whatever's happening at the time. I miss a real soul, a real collective amount of people with heartbeats and real souls responding to WWE's product. I mean, I miss that. I totally understand the pumping in the crowd noise. Baseball's doing it. NFL's doing it. It's totally fine. But I do miss the real reaction. We all do. I mean, I think that goes without saying. But yeah, I don't understand why Braun Strowman's there. Number one, he's a Raw guy now. Draft is done and over. And number two, how did he earn this championship opportunity? Yeah, crickets. That's what I thought. I mean, it's preposterous. It's nothing more than being concerned about ratings. As you said, you know, you talk about ads during the Women's Battle Royal that I heard about. And yeah, I understand there are a ton of ads in the Women's Battle Royal. I get it. But doesn't that just speak to what I just talked about with WWE being more concerned about their bottom line than a fan's viewership experience? We are second, folks. We are second. Everyone in the sound of my voice, if you're a fan of WWE, we are second place in their eyes. We are second place because they have a greater master to serve, a master that has more money than we do, even as collective fans. And that is the sponsors, the ads. They drive what WWE does and how they respond because they are the ones bringing in the serious revenue for the company. They are. So welcome to second place, folks. That's where we land. And I think that's what people need to understand, what WWE and why they do what they do sometimes. Even though why I just explained, about how we are actually number one, even though we're not the direct source of revenue, we affect that direct source of revenue in a big way through our viewership numbers, which drive how much the sponsorship sponsors and companies are willing to pay WWE for their ad space on the network. So, all right, I think I've beaten that to death. Okay, last voicemail. Let's get going.
Hey, Matt. I called last week. It's Josh from Dallas-Fort Worth area again. Sorry about all the messages last week, but I'll keep it down to one, I promise. So I got a couple rants and a couple questions. So after watching Raw last night and SmackDown, who in their right mind made it made the decision to have Lana have a title shot against Asuka? That makes zero sense to me, and I'd rather just not even be in the business at this point. I'm done with her. And then you guys called it correctly with the switching of the championship belts for the men's teams. They basically just said, "Hey, let's switch," and then they did this weird twerking dance and went on with their several ways. And then out of nowhere, Rude, it's glorious. I don't really know his name because I don't really know who he is. And Dolph got a title shot out of nowhere. Again, it just keeps happening. You just challenge and then you get another title shot. Makes zero sense to me. And then there's some other matches that are going to be going on brands that people aren't on anymore. Like Jeff Hardy's got a match against Lars, or you know, people have matches on Raw that are now on SmackDown, and it's like, if that's the case, then why didn't we just wait till after Hell in a Cell? Like, I don't understand. There's a lot of faulty writing that's been going on for me personally the last couple nights. It's just not really made any sense. Anyway, so my main question is, besides his family, who's Reigns going to go and have a feud with, because they pretty much just stacked Raw with all of the people that would even come close to, you know, going for that title. Big E maybe, like maybe that's how they build it up to where he comes in after WrestleMania. And I don't know. It just seems like Raw is really, really stacked now. I like a lot of the moves that have happened. I'm hoping, probably unpopular opinion, but I'm hoping Matt Riddle gets a revamp, because I really can't stand the bro. It's annoying to me. But yeah, I just wanted to mainly find out and see, because you're probably going to cover most of this, but who do you think Reigns is going to go against outside of his family and maybe after WrestleMania? And I'm also really, really disappointed. I called you last week about this, about Umberto and Dominic teaming up as a tag team. But it seems that they're just going to continue with the feud, and Umberto's going to get left in the dust. And I'm also interested into why they brought Murphy over again when they're clearly done, but I guess they're just going to drag on the whole affair or the whole.
Hey, Josh. So, yeah, you did get cut off because you hit that magic 3-minute mark. So I think you finished your thought, I hope. So here's the deal. You mentioned a lot of stuff here. Lana, I think we are all not excited about Lana earning a championship opportunity. But here's the thing. At least she earned it. And I don't mean in the long run of, wow, she's been so great for so long, and we're just hoping she's going to eventually get an opportunity, and she's been cutting her teeth, and look at how much she's done. No, I don't mean in that type of earning way where the fans organically feel like that person has earned an opportunity. It's more of just storyline-wise, in terms of like how they structured her earning an opportunity. She actually won a match to earn an opportunity. So that's fine with me as long as they explain it. So Lana earns an opportunity. I know all of us are just kind of groaning, but here's the thing, and here's where I want to put a positive spin on it. I'm not a Lana fan. I just want to say that first and foremost. I despised her in the Bobby Lashley whole deal. I loved her with Rusev at the very beginning when Rusev debuted, but I despised her personality. I don't mean in a way that she has heel heat, kind of like in the way Miz has heel heat. I don't enjoy his character either. It's more of just this, like, he's taking away from the product. It's not even like I want to see Lana or The Miz get their ass kicked. Like, I wouldn't pay to see that. There's a difference in heat. The difference in heat is here that I just want Lana gone. Just like I want The Miz and Morrison just gone. Like I don't want to see them get beat up. That is not even satisfying to me, which tells you it's not the right kind of heel heat. It's actually a turnoff of the product. And that's what Lana is. She's a turnoff of the product. So I want to be very clear about how I feel about there is differences in heel heat. And some people may even say, and I've argued at times, that heel heat is heel heat. That heat is heat. That's real heel heat. No. When you literally want to just change a channel and you don't want to see even that person even get beat up, you're doing it wrong. WWE, you're doing it wrong if people actually feel that way. There is a difference. So, but here's the positive spin. Lana getting an opportunity, at least it's something different. For all the fans that always want to say, oh, it's always the same matches, blah, 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 at least we're getting something different. There's nobody on this earth that believes Lana's going to win, but that's not what this is about. Lana earning an opportunity, at least in a match scenario, which, fine, is okay with me because it's something different. And you know what? This is going to be Lana's do-or-die time. I think this is a bigger match than people realize for Lana because she is not going to be put in this position very often. The other women have really kind of passed her by quickly in terms of skill, in terms of personality, in terms of in-ring ability. They seem to have passed her by quickly, and she's doing the best she can. I bet you she's in the Performance Center, which is now the Capitol Wrestling Center, I believe, a lot, and doing her best to work on her promos and all that. I don't even like the way she speaks. Just something so simple. Here's a small simple sample. She said on Raw that I'm paraphrasing, that I'm the best of all times. What? No, you're the best of all time. Not plural. Like, she said times a couple of times. And that is just a little thing, but it speaks to Lana's just annoyances about me. That's not good heel heat. It's not entertaining to me. She's obnoxious to me. So, again, good. It's different. It may be a performance that she outperforms with Asuka. It's on a big stage. It's something new for fans to see. And there's that. So that's number one. Number two, Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler get an opportunity out of nowhere. Yep. That's what happens. I don't even need to speak. This is a podcast in and of its own right. A topic in and of its own right anyway, about nonsensical championship opportunities for everyone. Seriously. This didn't even faze me. This didn't even cross my mind because I just don't even understand how people earn these opportunities. Right? You get, again, as I said, Braun Strowman facing Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship on SmackDown this coming Friday night. You have Zelina Vega, who earned an opportunity twice against Asuka for what? Just standing there and saying, I want a chance, opportunity at your title? Right? I mean, these things happen. Oh, and the grand method of them all, attack a champion to get an opportunity. Period. That's all you have to do. There's no need to go through a tournament. You just attack the person with the belt and you earn an opportunity. Think I'm wrong? Show me somebody. Tell me somebody out there. Was there ever a program started that the champion was attacked, that person who attacked the champion didn't get an opportunity at the belt? Yeah, I can't find one. So this is a larger problem of which I could rant for an entire hour or two on this. Okay, Roman going, who's he going to face? Big E? I think Big E's a candidate. There's no doubt about it. I think Big E certainly is in the conversation, although I will say about Big E, I'd be concerned about pushing him too hard too fast. They might get the Roman Reigns syndrome. I'd be a little bit worried about that. But other than that, I mean, you have Daniel Bryan, who kind of sneakily came into the draft. Same with Charlotte. Charlotte came in the draft. That was the first time they mentioned her name in months. Surprised they did that. But Kevin Owens is also, he was drafted in the second round. They could have Kevin Owens challenge Roman Reigns. Daniel Bryan could challenge Roman Reigns. I think that might probably be it on the babyface side of new people that he could face. So I think Kevin Owens is probably in line for a Roman Reigns opportunity. At the opportunity at his belt anyway. So certainly could be a chance. And again, Daniel Bryan, I think, would be a good candidate. Now that the roles are correctly cast with Bryan being a babyface and Roman Reigns being a heel, this could be a lot of fun upon Daniel Bryan's return, and I think it will be. So There's that. All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. And thank you, everybody, for calling in. If you'd like to be a part of the show, again, that number, 518-952-0247. That is the number for the show. Please call in, leave your messages, leave your rants, keep it PG, keep it under 3 minutes, or it just cuts you off. I mean, just period. If you leave multiple voicemails, I only pick one. I don't think it's fair to give somebody, you know, 6, 9, 12 minutes. Just 3 minutes each is I think, fair. I mean, it's just the way that I'd like to format the show. So, or you can email us your voicemail. People do that all the time too at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. So, all right, let's dive into a little bit more Monday Night Raw. And Zelina Vega, you know, I mentioned her quickly about earning an opportunity against Asuka twice for the Raw Women's Championship and not making any sense, even though I love her work. I love everything that she's done. I think she's got a lot of good, bright days ahead of her. This past week, she's on commentary. She goes from the, you know, basically her first match as a single star, saying she's done with Andrade, done with Angel Garza, earns an opportunity twice against Asuka for the Raw Women's Championship, and then goes back into a commentary spot, and then also feels sympathy for Andrade after his match with Angel Garza, which Angel Garza won. So I was a little bit alarmed about the fact that WWE would place her back with Andrade, if that's what they're hinting at. And I think they are. I hope not. Get Zelina away. Let her breathe in the women's division. Please. I love her as a manager. Yeah, she's really good. But I think, and I mean this as like, because I want to see the person and the character succeed. I think she deserves it. And I'm really concerned that they might not do it based on what I saw this past week, taking another step back in her career. It's like they start-stop, and that's exactly what they've done here. And again, this is a one-week deal. Maybe it's a temporary stop, but it's not encouraging if you're a Zelina Vega fan. So another thing that happened, a little bit more on the draft here, I want to go through the draft on part two here. Raw got The Fiend, Raw got Randy Orton, and Raw got Charlotte Flair. Probably the biggest women's announcement there was Charlotte Flair on Raw. Because she, I think of SmackDown, I think of Charlotte Flair. But her on Raw is, I think, it's a nice change, and it's telling me that they're getting close to re-debuting her. It's going to be nice, because I mentioned that Charlotte Flair got really worn out, and then she needs to take time off. Well, she has, and now it's going to feel fresh. Amazing, just a little time away. Bayley is on SmackDown. Street Profits are on SmackDown as champions. Bayley staying on SmackDown, good move. Bayley feels like SmackDown. She is SmackDown. So, good move there. And she's a SmackDown Women's Champion. She's done so much to make that belt. You could argue worth more than what Asuka is holding. And Asuka is a hell of a champion in her own right. In round two, we got Braun Strowman going to Raw, Matt Riddle going to Raw, Jeff Hardy going to Raw, and on SmackDown again, they get Daniel Bryan and Kevin Owens. There's your challengers for Roman Reigns. Keep that in mind. Matt Riddle coming to Raw, interesting. Jeff Hardy coming to Raw, interesting. Braun Strowman coming to Raw. Those are all really big players for SmackDown to come to Raw. Really big. But this is what the draft is all about, having those people who are just synonymous with their brand go to the other brand, and it makes them feel fresh, even though they haven't changed anything other than the color of the t-shirt that they're wearing, perhaps. So, Retribution was drafted in the third round to come to Raw. I am trying my best not to go on a rant about Retribution. If you guys have heard over the last several weeks, my feelings on Retribution are non-existent. And by the way, and I could be completely wrong, and if I am, call me out, tweet at me, wrestling_audio, by the way, on Twitter. My Twitter is wrestling_audio, or on Instagram at WWE_podcast. Did we ever get the advertised explanation from Mustafa Ali about his Retribution involvement? Did I miss it? Did I skip it? I couldn't find anything about it. So I was a bit annoyed that WWE would not follow through with what they advertised. I believe it was even on their website that Mustafa Ali was going to explain his actions, explain why he's a leader of Retribution, and Retribution just doesn't exist. Maybe they're not done with quarantining. I don't know. Maybe that's the reason. But I was like, come on, right? I was not happy with that, because as down as I am about the logic of this whole storyline with Retribution coming in, destroying crap, getting rewarded with contracts, talking about how they despise people who take WWE's money out of greed, yet their contracts also reward them with money, and WWE's legal team coming in and not doing anything about the fact that they caused a ton of liability for the company, and yet they're rewarded with contracts, attack the non-performers, the announcers, the production team, and they're still here. And you can draft them. Yet, and they were also explained that they can do anything to anyone at any time. Well, weren't they doing it anyway without contracts? Now they're taking WWE's money, and WWE is just saying, hey, we're not only going to allow you to do anything you want to anyone at any time, including production team, including fans, including destroying property, throwing bricks through glass, overturning cars, throwing Molotov cocktails at generators. We're going to pay you to do it. That's what they said. Isn't that absurd? Is anybody else with me? It's absurd that WWE would do this with no explanation. That's the worst part about it. And that's what really is what torches me every single time that they do something like this, that just they decide that they don't need an explanation. I don't get too involved. No, I at least appreciate something. I may tear it apart, but I like that better than nothing. Think about that. That's like me walking into Apple and throwing a brick through those lovely glass slates that they have in front of their store, tearing up all their crap, talking about how greedy everyone is in there, all the employees are greedy, and then Apple comes up to me, the manager comes up and says, all right, well, here's a contract of employment, you're hired. That's essentially what they've done. How does that work? How does that work? But Retribution gets drafted to Monday Night Raw. Every time I talk about it, it's just the most absurd example I've ever seen. And don't worry, guys. We get the 80s villain names of T-Bar, Mace, Slapjack, and Reckoning. I mean, if that isn't an 80s cheesy villain name, I don't know what is. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But I'm happy for Mustafa Ali. As terrible as this is the most relevant thing he's done in a while. But we didn't get an explanation. They're drafted to Raw, as if that means nothing, because they can do anything to anyone at any time. Lars Sullivan goes to SmackDown. Keith Lee stays on Raw. I like that. King Corbin stays on SmackDown. I mean, fine. King Corbin needs a shot in the arm worse than anybody. You could argue King Corbin needs it more than anybody right now. I mean, he is falling quickly into just obscurity, and just people are bored. They're bored by him. He's a really good promo. And this, I don't know if it's a character. Something needs to change with him. Alexa Bliss goes to Raw to join The Fiend. We got that on Raw, which I'll talk about right now, I guess. The Fiend and Alexa Bliss seem to be a team now. I like that. They are a team, as Alexa Bliss appeared out of nowhere and ended up doing a double Sister Abigail attacking Andrade and Zelina Vega. So, again, I know that I said that she seems to be, I was concerned about her coming back into a managerial role, but I wanted to save this part for now about talking about maybe they're a tag team. Maybe Andrade and Zelina are a temporary tag team to try to face off against The Fiend and Alexa Bliss, of which they will fail miserably. But Alexa Bliss and The Fiend, this is a hell of a pairing. And you talk about Alexa Bliss's career being revived. Yowza. I love it. I love the descent into madness. And here's some food for thought. You think Alexa Bliss is playing The Fiend? I don't know. Something to think about. We all believe that she's being mesmerized. And I think she really is. I think the 95% chance that this is legitimate on her character's part. But what if she's playing The Fiend and she's not really mesmerized, and this was all a ruse on her part? I don't know what the end game is, but just a thought. Moving down the list here into the remaining amount of draft picks, Elias returns in the fourth round, but he also returned to attack Jeff Hardy, as he was the one that Elias believes was driving the car in the summertime, when that whole staged incident from Sheamus where Jeff apparently was driving the car and smelled the booze. Remember that whole thing in the performance center? So Elias returns as a heel and attacks Jeff Hardy. Sami Zayn goes to SmackDown, or stays on SmackDown, but Elias goes to Raw. Lacey Evans goes to Raw. Sheamus goes to Raw. Cesaro and Shinsuke stay on SmackDown. So Sami Zayn, Cesaro, and Shinsuke Nakamura all stay on SmackDown. Now that Cesaro and Shinsuke are no longer champions, could they all get the band back together, please? I loved that group. Maybe they can. I hope they do. Nikki Cross goes to Raw. R-Truth goes to Raw. And Dabba Kato goes to Raw. Whatever. I'm not excited by R-Truth at the 24/7 championship anymore. I haven't been for many months. He's a 42-time champion. I don't care. Dabba Kato was good at Raw Underground. Raw Underground seems to have gone just that and done that. It's underground. It's so far underground that we can't get cameras down there, and hopefully we can't. I mean, it's just, it's done, it's over, hopefully, and I don't miss it at all. Nikki Cross is fine. I mean, she certainly overachieved with Alexa Bliss. Ziggler and Rude go to SmackDown. Apollo Crews goes to SmackDown. That's really good for Apollo Crews, I think. I really, really believe that. And Ziggler and Rude. That is the smart move. Titus O'Neil, Peyton Royce, and Akira Tozawa all go to Raw. Carmella and Aleister Black go to SmackDown. Now, the match that Aleister Black and Kevin Owens had on Raw, I love that. That was physical as hell. That was really physical. I think it was good for Kevin Owens to finally vanquish Aleister Black and move on. It tells me that when he goes to SmackDown that things are going to get pretty hot and heavy for him after Roman Reigns is done with Jey Uso. That's what I think they're setting him up for. So expect to be Kevin Owens treated a little bit more seriously over the coming weeks to set him up for Roman Reigns. That's my guess. So Aleister Black, though, goes to SmackDown. That could be interesting as well. I'm not sure what they're doing with Aleister Black. I don't know. Aleister Black and Kevin Owens on the same show is interesting. You'd think that program is done. We never got an explanation for Aleister Black. Did he ever explain why he attacked Kevin Owens? Or are they just that afraid to put a microphone in front of his face? We never got a single explanation from Aleister Black. Why are you attacking Kevin Owens? Nothing. All right, moving on. Lana, Riddick Moss, and Arturo Rojas all go to Raw. Natalya and the Riot Squad go to SmackDown. Okay, fine. You're getting down into the bottom of the barrel here, but Riot Squad is on SmackDown. That I like. They can challenge Bayley. And also Natalya can challenge Bayley, assuming that Sasha doesn't take the belt off her first. That's good. I mean, they've essentially put in three baby faces into SmackDown for the women. That's a positive for me. So, all right. Some other things that happen on Raw, and then we'll kind of close out the show here. We had the brawl between Orton and McIntyre. I mean, that's fine. It didn't really help or hurt the program. It's just kind of, they want to beat each other up. Let them fight. I mean, it's just fine. It's fine. Again, it didn't help or hurt. It just kind of was what it was with those two. All right. Well, I think that kind of covers everything. And I miss things sometimes. I really do, because my brain goes in 14 directions with how much happened on Monday night. But I hope I covered the majority of it. And again, if you want to hear my thoughts, I'm here three times a week doing my own shows. And then I have co-hosts who do their own shows. Tomorrow will be Wrestling Nostalgia, of which I am still working on a topic of choice. And then I'll be back Sunday night for a week in review. But in between there, you're going to get a SmackDown review. You're going to get a rivalries included into the feed here. So if you like WWE rivalries, you'll be also included in this feed. So subscribe if you haven't already. Tell a friend about the show. That's how the word spreads. And I'm really appreciative for everyone who, if you've gotten to this point in the show, then you are a true fan of the show, I will say. And I appreciate those of you who have gotten this far, and much love to you guys. So, all right, email us at realwwepodcast@gmail.com, and also call us. Please leave a voicemail. Love seeing those voicemails pop up in my notifications and seeing the transcript of what you guys are, what you guys have said, and then incorporating it into the show. So, also Botch Guy coming, the Hell in a Cell review in just a couple of weeks. So, thank you so much, guys. Until then, I'll talk to you soon.